Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name this week is Katie Stoll. This week.
Uh-huh.
And what's yours?
What's mine this week? What is it? This week. What is it?
I think it's...
Give me a name.
Is it, it starts with a C?
Bzzzt. Too late. It's Cody.
Hi, Cody.
You were close. Hi.
And this week, we are being joined by the hilarious Jamie Loftus. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Hi. What's up?
What's up?
I just completely stumbled. I just fell into... My cat just ate a fly. I was watching him eat a fly, and I was really...
That's some riveting quarantine content.
It's the best show.
Like, playing with the fly for a while, or was it just a quick, like, snap out of the air kind of thing?
No, he's pretty... As far as a carnivore goes, he's pretty humane about it.
Okay.
He takes the fly out of his misery, but he really savors it, and so you just see the goop kind of gooping around. It was nice. It was good viewing.
Forgot about
awesome.
The goop.
Quarantine right. content. Before we get started, I just want to wish everybody a very happy National Memo Day. It's Memo Day, guys.
Thank God.
Oh, that's exciting. Goodness.
What can you say about memos? I mean, there's so many different types of memos. It's no longer just the boring old company memo. We now have voice memos. There's emailed memos. There's probably like family memos if you're kind of nerdy like that.
Sure. Memos.
Text memos. And I think a memo can really be expanded to be like a note to self, really.
I like that.
I guess that's expanding the definition of memo. But the point is that it's National Memo Day. And
I appreciate that this is the most I've ever heard the word memo in such a brief period of time. And the word means nothing to me anymore.
It looks like memo.
Memo. Just a sound now.
It's memo. I think we've been mispronouncing it the whole time.
A memo random. Yes.
I'll shout out the Evernote company at this point because I'm just stuck with them. That's where I put my memos. And
that's where you put your memos.
Mm-hmm. And then they make you pay for it. But you're like, well, this is where all my memos from the past 10 years are going to be. I don't know what else to do. I'm not going to move my memos. So I guess I'm just going to give them $4 a month to hold on to my memos.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty locked in at this point.
It's too late for me and all of my memos.
Speaking of that, thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Even More News. You probably don't think much about internet privacy on your own home network. ExpressVPN will secure your privacy and protect your information. Visit expressvpn.com/morenews and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. Heck yeah, you can. Do it.
Oh, Jesus.
I want to
do it right now.
I've been getting a weird... I don't know if this is a thing ExpressVPN can help, but sometimes when I use Zoom, I get these little warning messages that say, warning, hackers are trying to fish your personal information. Do you want to trust this site? And it's like, no, I don't want to trust that site.
But I desperately want the content that's on the site. It's most of the garbage websites I go to get my stupid news has those warnings. And I tend to just blow through them. So I could probably benefit from not doing
ExpressVPN,
that. ExpressVPN,
guys. ExpressVPN. Mm-hmm. No more just clicking cancel over and over and over again until the windows are gone.
Jamie, we've been starting all of our episodes just checking in with our guests, seeing how their quarantine experience is going, the good, the bad, whatever you feel comfortable sharing. How's it going?
It's been okay. I mean, I think all things considered, I'm pretty lucky. It's like one of those weird things where it seems like it's been similar for both of you, where I've been working kind of nonstop since the quarantine started, which is very, very lucky and sounds like a flex, but has also been very draining and I don't know. Yeah.
It's very with so much gratitude to be employed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to have something to spend my time on, because that is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It is extra exhausting. We are experiencing the same feelings of grief as other people are, but you also have to have the brain capacity to think about your work and put out products that you are proud of. And it can be a struggle, especially if you're having an off day. to pull it together. And so much of your work is also being on top of the news.
It is. Yeah. And then the other, which is, I don't know, being on top of the news is difficult, but I've had even more trouble with the side of my work that has nothing to do with the news. And you just have to like turn off your current events brain and just forget what is happening to you and everyone you know in real time and be like, let's write a cartoon. Like
I'm curious about that because people are having a lot of the struggle to be creative during this time.
Yeah, it's been, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of well-intentioned conflicting messages out there about what the proper reaction is, where it's just like, it's just different for everybody. But there's a number of, I feel like they're generally well-intentioned, but the celebrity messaging that you get from like very successful writers or just people who basically don't need to work if they don't want to, which is great for them. But like there was that first wave of advice that was like, write King Lear, even though like, I don't even think Shakespeare was a person that actually really existed. Right. and then, so there was that wave of like, hustle, girl, you've got this, and hated that wave. But I also found the second wave of response to that equally sinister, where it was like a bunch of really successful writers who never need to work another day in their life being like, I haven't written a word during quarantine. And I'm like, well, good for you. Like, I can't eat I don't write a word down. So
that's a really good point.
It's
right. But yeah, like wealthy retired people being like, I don't know, I'm just chilling.
Right. Okay. Like, I'm just cool. Like, I guess maybe a couple months ago, I would have thought I wanted the advice of a best-selling author. But it turns out it's pretty condescending and frustrating to hear.
Yeah, those are equally frustrating pieces of advice.
J.K. Rowling's been like, treat yourself, everybody.
Right. It's okay. Just like, thanks. But who has the means?
It's so it is insidious. I think that we all have, or a lot of us struggle with having the struggle of what our self-expectations are and the pressure that we're putting on ourselves in general in a normal life. And that, especially in LA or people that are creatives or freelancers, add to that the stress of everything that's happening. It's a really unreasonable piece of advice and actually unhealthy for some people that might not need that extra pressure on themselves when they're struggling. And at the same time, especially as this goes on and we're very keenly feeling the economic ramifications of this, it's upsetting to see wealthy people just say like, it's fine, don't do anything.
I don't really want their advice. Yeah, there are like, I still take some joy in celebrity culture. I think it's very funny and I like, it's fun to watch idiots do things in large ways. But I don't, but I don't really want their advice, I've discovered. And then like mental health wise, I mean, everyone's on their very much their own journey, but it's, I don't know. I feel like I know that my mental health is not great right now, but it's also just like, I almost like am putting up a blocker of like, well, I can't deal with it right now. Like I can't.
Yeah.
There is like, I guess a temptation to be like, oh, let's explore. Like I have, a fun blend of, OCD and bipolar, which just basically means that it's just like, well, I'm just not going to sleep and everything is great. And then on other days, not as much, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like mental health wise, I know that I have for sure regressed, but I also am trying to, you know, be easy on myself about it because I don't know what to do really. It's like, everyone is regressed in different ways. I want to handle it, but I know that if I choose, you know, this moment, this week, this month to deal with it, then I would just be dealing with it inside by myself. And like, I just don't want to do it. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, first off, I'll say, I think the awareness that there's some amount of regression is probably a pretty good sign of things. Like, we can feel it, and being able to acknowledge and pinpoint, like, I see what's happening, because I've been feeling that a lot too.
Yeah.
And I think about my mom a lot, who just kind of puts her head down and barrels through an unpleasant situation and manages to put blinders up. And I think of that as like both a dangerous and a great skill,
right?
That I kind of feel like I'm adopting more of right now, where you're like, I feel it happening. I feel all my anxiety, and all I can do is take one step at a time, because you're right. It's not the best time. I mean, it is a good time to be exploring stuff and doing what you can, but
for sure.
Also the pressure again of being like, oh, I'm going to make some big revelation, personal growth right now, is a lot to ask, because we've been stripped away of the things that we rely upon in our normal life that have helped us to gain clarity in the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's all incredibly relatable.
Yeah. I'm definitely not giving advice. This has just been like my own I don't know. Yeah. The thing that I feel like has the closest thing to showing growth that I've been able to do is just like accepting that things have fallen back a little bit, and it's not to a point where it's unsafe or impacting my relationships, but it's also, I don't know, I've just been acknowledging like, there's a little bit of 2017 Jamie leaking out, and I don't love it, but you know, we can get back to 2019 Jamie. I have faith.
You're not going to go back to 2019 Jamie. You're going to go to skip ahead to, right.
You're moving to 2022
Jamie.
I forgot right. That's what growth is. It's not going. Yeah, 2017 Jamie, she's a bit of a mess, but you know, 2016 Jamie is way worse, so we just need to like be on the lookout for things.
Yeah, as long as you like hover around 2017.
Yeah.
That's a good sign, right?
I was functional. I was not torpedoing the relationships in my life. I wasn't burning bridges. I just wasn't sleeping a lot and maybe being a little annoying to be in a relationship with.
Oh, interesting.
There you go. Sounds perfect.
I think we have to move on to talking about the news in a second, but I am curious about cohabitating in quarantine, what that experience is like for you.
Yeah, I've had a generally really nice experience. I feel really lucky because my boyfriend and I mean, Katie, I think we had the same situation.
Yeah.
Where I moved in with, we both moved in together into a new apartment 2 weeks before quarantine started.
Yeah.
So it was very much, the learning curve was just like a line pointing upwards. But it's been good. And I think that like there's been, we're just kind of like expediting the getting used to each other phase of a relationship, where I feel like normally, I don't know, I've lived with one other person before, and I felt like after close to a year, I understood how they lived and how like my living style balanced with it. But I just, it's been, you know, 2.5 months. I'm like, I think I get it. I think we've basically figured it out. And so, yeah, I feel lucky.
What's wild about it is for a lot of people that have already lived with their partners during this, they had a baseline. Mm-hmm. They understood what a normal day living with each other was like, or they understood what the pitfalls were going to be without it being heightened like this, you know?
Right.
Without it being like, oh, I don't have anywhere to go if I need to have some space, you know? And that's an interesting thing. And that's another thing, you just are like, I accept it. This is the way it is. And there are so many wonderful things about being able to have somebody with you during this time. We should probably talk about news, although I would talk to you about your personal life for hours. but that's a different show, I think.
Even more yous.
Even more yous. Right? Oh, maybe that's a show we start doing. We'll see.
That's so pure.
No promises.
That's my contribution for the week. I'll see you later.
No. I need you to stick around for the next 40 minutes or whatever. We have a lot to talk about, but there was some late breaking news today, or maybe news circulating around the internet, that I wanted to kick things off with. And that is that Amy Klobuchar is being vetted as a potential vice presidential pick for Joe Biden. I don't want to talk about that for a bit. But the first thing I want to say is that everybody's really up in arms about it on Twitter, as am I. But she's been being vetted for a while now. This isn't brand new news. And, you know, we don't know. what's going to happen. Right now, it feels like this is a warning shot, like, oh, she might be it. But we don't know that for sure right now.
Well, also, yeah, so the vetting thing, like, there have been lists and, like, considerations. I think this is, like, an indication of the next step, right? It's not, like, because even, like, before where they're like, oh, they're considering this person, they're considering this person. It wasn't an official, like, we're going to vet this person and see if this is...
Well, I've certainly heard of other people's names as being vetted. And even in some of these articles, they mentioned a senator that I don't have in front of me.
But yeah, and I think also, like, there's a sense of, I mean, everyone's pretty upset about it. And I think there's a lot of people being like, well, yeah, like, this is just the process. There are a lot of people being considered. They've been considering her for a long time. It's not, doesn't mean anything necessarily. And I don't even necessarily disagree with that. But I do think that the fact that she has even been considered is not a great sign that they have learned literally a damn thing in the past 4 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. It's time to, you know, club them on to the polls.
It's tough. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Amy Klobuchar.
It makes perfect sense.
We did
Tim Kaine.
It makes perfect sense.
4 years ago. It makes complete sense.
But I mean, strategically, he doesn't need more moderate Midwesterners.
I mean, if they're framing him like he's a progressive FDR type, right? Like, that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, he's moving left. He's doing the boldest, most progressive platform ever, which is true, but, like, that's relative. And so I think to them probably makes sense that they're like, oh, he's going the progressive route, but we have Amy, don't worry.
Yeah, I feel like this is just, I don't know. I wasn't... surprised to hear this at all. And it's also because he committed to having a female running mate, and he's such a generous interpretation of him for me is that he's a very bare minimum guy, and this is the bare minimum of what you can offer as a female candidate. Like, it seems consistent,
right? It's like I wouldn't have been surprised if he picked Nikki Haley to be his VP. Like,
yeah. Oof, that would have been pushing it.
I mean,
he's talked
about having Republicans in his cabinet. I wouldn't put it past him.
He talked about vice president, potentially, if it was the right person. But he kind of walked that back. But yeah. Well, it's frustrating. But also, we don't know for sure yet. But also, yeah, I guess it wouldn't be surprising. Although, I think it would be the worst possible choice. That does not make sense.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Yeah.
I was going to say they're doing their best, but I don't think that that is true. So
it's just you're making it harder and harder and harder for me to give a fuck.
It's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, especially in terms of, like, one of the biggest issues. I mean, among the many issues with this campaign, one of them is that there's very little enthusiasm about it. And yes. I don't see how choosing Amy Klobuchar helps remedy that at all.
Lights that fire.
Yeah.
It's only funny.
This will change everything.
It is kind of
and
funny.
I do wonder if there is, and I'm probably giving them too much credit for, like, thinking about this, if it's a sort of move of, like, oh, yeah, we're vetting Amy Klobuchar, and then everyone's, like, really pissed because, obviously, that's a terrible choice, and it is just Tim Kaine again, so that whoever it ends up being, it sort of softens that blow.
It
like,
could
no
be.
One's going to be, I don't think there aren't many people that would add excitement or enthusiasm, like Jamie was talking about. So maybe they're, like, trying to play that and be like, oh, well, at least it's not Amy Klobuchar, you know, which we warned you. We were vetting her, you know, but we didn't. So good for us. Right.
I mean, there's any number of things, manipulative things that this news could be, you know.
Sure.
Or it's meaningless. And
or it's meaningless.
Literally pick Tim Kaine again. I think that'd be really funny.
Oh, my God.
I would be all in for Biden if he picked Tim Kaine. I would knock on doors for Biden Kaine. It's just because it's so funny and sad.
You can just recycle old stickers.
Exactly.
Just kind of, like, cross out.
Cross out.
Because, like, the problem was Hillary. It wasn't that Tim Kaine. Like, Tim Kaine was the powerhouse on that ticket.
Yeah.
We just needed to change the top.
Amy Klobuchar, as, you know, if things work out, and work out is, again, another generous term. I mean, Amy Klobuchar as the first woman VP is just not a very exciting idea to me. I'm like, it's not fair to women. That's not fair to every woman.
It's so disappointing.
Really funny. Still funny.
Let's move on to some other disappointing things. Oof. Okay. One thing I don't want to discuss anymore is hydroxychloroquine, but here we are again. Because you know what? Here we are again. It's 2020. Earlier this week, it was revealed that President Trump is taking hydroxychloroquine preventatively.
Well, so, okay. So it was revealed that he said that he's taking it.
It was revealed that he said.
It's just, it's so funny. I'm sorry. Because the video of him doing it, it's hilarious. Everyone's like freaking out. And like, if you watch him talk about it, he's talking about hydroxychloroquine. I was like, people take it. It's like, pause. I'm taking it. And you can literally see, like, when they're like, wait, you're taking it?
Yeah.
They're like, internally, in his eyes, you see him, like, shrug inside as if to say, sure, why not?
Yes. And
like, he's not, like, he's just like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. Believe whatever.
Very easy to say he might have just said that. The White House backed him up on that. They lie all the time. That means nothing.
Well, okay. So also his doctor's note is very unclear as to whether or not they are giving it to him at all.
Oh, really?
They like brought up like, we brought forward the option.
Yeah. In this quote I have, it says, he said the White House physician, quote, didn't recommend hydroxychloroquine, but offered it to him.
Right. So like, even the confirmation is like hedging their bets on whether or not it's true.
Yeah. Also,
that's the same logic that like a doctor gives you like a lollipop or a sticker. It's like, it's, this isn't a prescription, but you can have it if you want.
Offered it to me.
This story broke, about the same time that the World Health Organization officially warned people should not be taking hydroxychloroquine. Look, if you've been listening to this podcast, we've known for weeks that health experts agree that taking hydroxychloroquine for coronavirus is not a good idea. It poses health risks, especially for people with health conditions.
That's why he's taking it, though, because he has no health conditions.
Yeah. He also,
he's the healthiest man.
Apparently, this is from The Guardian, but he dismissed people saying that you shouldn't take hydroxychloroquine, and because he dismissed it as an enemy statement. From The Guardian, the president claimed a recent U.S. study indicating hydroxychloroquine was not an effective coronavirus treatment was a Trump enemy statement. If you look at the one survey, the only bad survey, they were giving it to people that were in very bad shape. They were very old, almost dead. It was a Trump enemy statement.
Enemy statement. I have never heard the phrase enemy statement before. This is new.
It's also like, even
no, science was enemy statements. Oh God.
What's weird about Christ. I mean, there's so much. It's weird. Weird isn't the right word. Extra,
well, it's
dumb.
A lie too,
it's a lie. But like, you know, okay, he's taking it as a preventative measure. It's not a vitamin, you know, it's not like gonna keep your immune system up. And there's this story of this woman with lupus who takes hydroxychloroquine and thought that she was maybe kind of protected because she was taking it because of all of the stuff that's circulating. And she was pretty good about staying in, but she went to the market a couple times and ended up getting coronavirus.
God.
Anyway.
Oh, that's another thing. Real quick. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but like, when publications talk about hydroxychloroquine, they seem to always refer to it as a malaria drug.
Yeah.
Which is like, it seems like they're trying to distance themselves from like the reality of it, where like, it's a lupus drug. It's for people with lupus. When you talk about malaria, I think that if you're like reading the news in America, you're like, oh, well, that doesn't affect people.
Right.
Like, you know, no one here needs the malaria drug, so why would I worry about it? When like, no, people like with lupus need it. I don't know. It's like, like AP News was like, their headline was like, he touts malaria drugs. Like, well, no, mention that like people, your neighbors might need it.
I mean,
right?
Right. Yeah.
You would hope that kind of reporting is included. It's all frustrating. I bring up this story because I also want to talk about Nancy Pelosi and her comments in response to it. After the news that Trump was taking hydroxychloroquine, whether or not he is, who knows? Actually, we know he probably isn't. Nancy Pelosi made the following statement. He's our president, and I would rather he not be taking something that has not been approved by the scientists, especially in his age group and his, shall we say, weight group. Morbidly obese, they say. So I think it's not a good idea.
That's cool.
People had opinions on this. Mine is that it's very disappointing. I know that on the surface, it can be argued. People are arguing that she is making an important point that would maybe help convince other people to not follow the president's actions. But I don't think that that's really true. You know,
it's not the approach.
The same people who are saying that are the people who for years have like praised her for her epic shade.
Yes.
Like, she right. was, this whole, is the like, whole tactic of her isn't legislation, it's epic shade.
Yeah.
So like to frame it like, oh, she was being serious. Come on, guys.
Anyone who told her about memes should go to jail.
I know.
Because I just...
God, she's like, chasing them.
Yeah, like I do appreciate some of the things she's mm-hmm. done, but these moments, it's like she can always be counted on to say the corniest shit. And in this case, it was like irresponsible yes. on top of being corny and stupid. And yeah, she's there's a lot of cringe with Nancy Pelosi.
The specific word choice of morbidly obese is obviously something intended to piss the president off. And like, yes, the president is overweight, but being overweight inherently doesn't mean that a person is unhealthy, which is what she's insinuating. Right. If she really cared about warning about the dangers of the drug, she would have said something along the lines of he shouldn't be taking it because he has heart disease. You know, because he doesn't.
Also, morbidly obese is like a
medical term.
An actual like medical term.
Yes.
That doesn't apply to right. his height and weight, his alleged weight.
Right.
But like still.
Regardless, she's not a doctor. She doesn't get to classify him as that, you know. And also, but truly, the heart disease point is important because you don't have to be overweight to have that. She also knew that this comment would make its way around the internet. Like you were saying, she understands memes now and she gets memed a lot.
Sort of.
Well, she like, knows that memes
she
exist
knows,
now.
But and she knows that she gets a lot of attention and the president, you know, she picks at the president.
She wants a new gif.
But like the problem is that this doesn't hurt him. It hurts us collectively. You know, we saw memes yeah. like the Girther movement or President Plump and when people would push back on that saying, hey, I'm fat, I am offended by this, you guys are dehumanizing us. Also, all the stuff that I've just said, that being overweight doesn't mean that, you know, or larger doesn't mean that you're unhealthy inherently, you know? And then people just don't seem capable of responding to that. It's a really frustrating phenomenon. Well, it's a human phenomenon, but it's disappointing.
Yeah.
Just the knee jerk, he does it, he calls people fat, why can't we? Well, do you want to be like the president? He also rapes women.
Many people do. Yes.
Also.
Yeah, when they go low, we go, okay, us too.
Also,
yeah.
Even just fat shaming doesn't just harm quote unquote fat people, right? It harms all of us because it reinforces the idea that our value is with our weight. And also right now, people are struggling across the board. One thing we don't need is added shame about size. You know, some people might be struggling to stay on a diet. Some people might be triggered by that and saying like a reminder that they want to lose weight and they're feeling lost right now because they don't have access to food, you know, that's healthy. In general, we need to address fat shaming and look upon our own biases because it's just deeply ingrained in us, this idea that if you are struggling with your weight, it's because there's something wrong with you, when we don't talk about the like social and economic factors that contribute to some people not having access to good food options, you know, and how expensive it is to eat healthily. Anyway, that's my little rant about that.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, this like doesn't hurt the president. Like it goes,
right.
It doesn't hurt the president. It just hurts other people. And like, you know, by someone as like quote unquote influential as Nancy Pelosi setting the precedent that it's like it's okay to talk this way about people, then people will just take it in bad faith and perpetuate all the horrible shit they've been perpetuating forever. Nancy Pelosi is just such a cringy figure, and it really makes my eyes roll out of my head. She had a She was like featured in the New York Times fashion section this week for her masks.
Oh, no. And for like her scarves.
For her. The many masks of Nancy Pelosi. No. I'm like, get out of my life. I again, it's just the sort of thing where I'm like, Nancy Pelosi, could you just do your job? Like, I don't need to see you clapping. I don't need to hear your opinion on people's bodies. I just would love if you just did your job.
Hell yeah.
Please.
Yeah. It's I always hear like the phrase like cult of personality thrown around, especially about like farther left candidates in particular. But my God, like the scarf article about like every fawning piece about Nancy Pelosi is exactly that.
Yeah.
There's nothing about her and what she believes in her is doing that like warrants that kind of behavior. It's just this sort of like celebritization of politicians he didn't usher it in, but he really opened the door for a lot of other people.
He slingshotted it.
Yeah. And granted, it's like I get that, you know, like female politicians are always like the fashion of it all is always brought up more. And that's not Nancy Pelosi's fault. The headline, The Many Masks of Nancy Pelosi, was a really unfortunate way to start my day today.
Yeah. Also, just there's something about like the strategic aspect of it, too, that's really frustrating. Because I like everything we said so far is true. But also, her goal was to piss him off, right? Like, that's just why she said it. So aside from all the collateral damage and how, like, unhelpful it is, she just did it to piss him off. As if that is an effective strategy.
It's, yeah.
Like, I feel like she and a lot of Dems are still, like, in this mindset of, like, if he gets pissed off enough, then people will turn around on him. They'll be like, oh, he's tweeting about how Nancy called him fat, and that's what's going to make people not vote for him. Right. And it's like, you just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, what is this strategy of just making him mad? Like, it does nothing. It just distracts from, like, things that are going on.
It's only an effective strategy for her and raising her profile. It in no way benefits the people that it's her job to serve. It's literally just for
100%.
Her.
100%. Okay, we need to take a quick break. But then we're going to be back for even more news.
Hi. So you know how when you want a little bit of online privacy, you pop over to incognito mode and then go hog wild because then your online activity can't be traced. Or like you'll delete your browsing history for reasons. So your internet service provider can't see what websites you visited. Or like how doing those things doesn't actually stop your activity from being traced. Twist! All right, so maybe it's time for ExpressVPN, which makes sure your provider can't see the totally normal sites you've visited. Everything is routed through a shared IP address, so your normal activity is anonymized and can't be traced to you. It encrypts 100% of your completely normal data and can do so on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. It works with the tap of a button. It's actually very easy to use, even if you have, like, no idea what you're doing. I like it because I value privacy as well as very normal websites. Like, when I'm visiting www.normalandfinewebsite.great, I fire up ExpressVPN. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that I trust to secure my privacy. Visit our special link at expressvpn.com/morenews, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/morenews.
expressvpn.com/morenews to learn more. I inserted myself in the ad.
It was great. It was perfect.
And we are back as promised for even more news. Woo.
Woo.
You guys want to talk about that Ronan Farrow article that made waves this week? It's too bad we're gonna.
I can't wait.
And maybe some of that Matt Lauer stuff too. Who knows? In case you guys missed it, New York Times columnist Ben Smith, the former editor of BuzzFeed, who came under fire when he made the controversial decision to publish the Steele dossier back in 2016. Well, that guy, he released an op-ed on the New York Times this week criticizing Ronan Farrow's reporting and resistance journalism in general. What are your guys' thoughts?
First of all, I would argue that resistance journalism is publishing that dossier, right?
I would. That's, yeah. Slam dunk, Cody.
Like, all right. Just checking.
I would agree with you completely.
I don't completely, like, I see where he's go. Like, I understand what he's saying. I think that he's making some valid criticism. I just don't under, I guess that I'm lacking the context as to why this is a major news story and not mm-hmm. just something that would be published in a magazine about journalism. It seems a little granular to try to make this large a story out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. There are some okay points. Like, yeah, you know, we need to make sure that you check sources, that you follow every followable lead, you know, corroborate what you can. We talked about this a lot in our Worst Year Ever episode this week when we went through the different articles about Tara Reid and Joe Biden. And those are valid points. But the problem is he doesn't do what he himself is preaching about.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like, he'll make a statement and not follow up and include the other context for the response. Because a lot of stuff, if you look it up, this article, and you poke around on Twitter, you'll see all sorts of stuff that's rebutting some of the points that he himself made. And he's criticizing that Ronan made this claim without allowing for this, which in many cases was false. Ronan does, you know, outline the other sides of it. But then, you know, is doing it himself.
Yeah, it's a weird piece to me. I feel like Cody was saying this before the show. I think maybe in a couple of weeks we'll understand why he's choosing this exact moment. Mm-hmm. And then Ronan Farrow took to Twitter right away to say, like, I stand by my reporting and all that. And he had a pretty prompt, hard response to it. I don't know. It does rub me a little bit the wrong way. I don't understand why this story is taking place now. And it's not even, I mean, it's like, I'm open to hearing criticism about Ronan Farrow. Yeah. You've got to attach yourself to the movement and not individuals. Individuals always let you down and all that stuff. Never trust nepotism. That's another thing. But I just from Ben Smith, yeah. I'm just like, do I care what he thinks? I don't know.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's very weird. Yeah.
Part of this is, it's complicated. I do think that more will be revealed. We'll get more information about what's happening here.
Yeah, there's context we're missing that I think will be clear.
But it does strike me as interesting that this is breaking. And the thrust of this, there's a lot of points he brings up about Ronan Farrow and his reporting, but a big chunk of it is about his Me Too reporting with Weinstein and Matt Lauer. And it strikes me as weird that we see all
convicted
of these
convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein.
Right. I'm just,
you know, and like, even in the piece, he says, like, obviously it worked, but should we be doing this kind of journalism? And it is a question that's kind of posed throughout the piece. And like, it's weird that it's happening at the same time that we're having all these Tara Reid conversations to me when we're picking apart the past reporting of it and how her story has been presented. And I don't know that that's connected, but it just seems pretty coincidental, at least, yeah. You know?
My thing is kind of like, this is a valid question to ask, but why frame it as a hit piece? And mm-hmm. why also just like, I feel like a better version of having this discussion is having like a round table with journalists discussing this issue, like, and not framing it as a weird hit piece that's an editorial.
Other examples, like other reporters,
right.
Don't like they're like, he's not the only one that would fall in this category.
Exactly.
I imagine. So like, okay, here are like five examples of this kind of reporting that I have a problem with.
Yeah.
Not like Ronan Farrow, whatever yeah. he writes, don't trust it. Like,
it's, and it yeah. really does feel like a hit piece. I mean, he repeatedly refers to him as like kind of a young up and coming reporter, unseasoned, you know. At one point he says he's flying a little too close to the sun. And there's also these insinuations that Ronan is a conspiracy theorist. You know, like, he makes this whole case that Ronan thought Hillary Clinton was trying to sabotage the investigation and protect Weinstein, but that the reality is that Ronan had simply misinterpreted a phone call from her team. And, you know, he's a conspiracy theorist for that. And like, first of all, it's entirely possible that she did. And this is somebody that proudly voted for her in 2016. But also, you know, I read this one Slate article and he digs in a little bit. You guys can check that out for yourself. But, you know, he says, I don't readily see anywhere where he actually did that. And that, you know, Ben kind of presented this information in a misleading way. Again, the thing that he's criticizing Ronan for doing.
Yeah.
It's just.
And also, like, that, I don't know, that framing, sometimes it pings my brain whenever someone like that refers to something like that as a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, it really instantly lumps the idea into like the QAnon type, like
absolutely
conspiracy kind of stuff, as opposed to like, oh, like powerful people with shared interests kind of protecting each other. Like, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's just like what happens in the world.
Right.
So just that framing is very weird to me,
because then it dilutes the case against the real conspiracy theories. Like, it's different.
It muddies it all. There's no distinction then when you use that to refer to like something that, yeah, that's.
Yeah.
That's not unlikely. I don't know.
Yeah. And this annoying story was made even worse when Matt Lauer threw his goddamn hat into the ring, too, and published a terrible piece on Mediaite. In defense
that's
of himself.
That's so funny that he can only get published on Mediaite.
I know.
That's pretty funny.
I know.
Great.
But also,
I'm waiting for Harvey Weinstein's Medium post about this.
I know.
I'm just like, this is, I mean, yeah, the fact that Matt Lauer gets his say in this is like, no one wants this say.
Yeah. Basically, the piece is he launched his own investigation, which included interviewing ex-boyfriends of the woman who claims he raped, which is ironic. You know, he's criticizing the objectivity of Ronan's work,
right,
and he's investigating the rape claim against him. But the thrust of Matt Lauer's response was that, yes, he had an inappropriate relationship, but that it wasn't rape and Ronan didn't do any fact checking. And he tries his best to debunk the idea that his sexual assault misconduct was consensual, you know, trying to poke holes in her story. But it just completely ignores so much about what the story was with him. You know, even in the assault victim even described it as, it was non-consensual in that I was too drunk to consent. It was non-consensual in that I said multiple times that I didn't want to have anal sex. That is non-consensual, but she also understands that, like, she was there and that it's complicated and muddy. But also, that was not the only aspect of the story. Other women had come forward. Another former employee had said he'd locked the door and assaulted her. He once gave a colleague a sex toy as a present, and none of those things are being pushed back on. It's just like,
yeah, I don't, the Matt Lauer stuff, I honestly didn't, I acted in a radical act of self-care and did not read what Matt Lauer had to say. I do think it's funny. I just Googled Matt Lauer to see if there's any developments in that story. And there is an E! News story that says Matt Lauer has a tattoo on his forearm. It's a new one. And it says, "Hatred corrodes the container it's carried in." And you're just
love
like,
it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Fuck,
so good.
Matt Lauer. This is just the most cursed piece of news possible.
He saw that on a needlepoint in an Airbnb.
But it's like, you know, Ben Smith's reporting kind of opened the whatever Pandora's box of leading to a Matt Lauer Mediaite piece. The last thing anyone wants. It's, I don't know. I'm still very conflicted about it. And I feel like I won't fully understand how I feel about all of this. And for a couple of weeks until the context is more clear.
Yeah.
But Ronan
Farrow
isn't above criticism.
And I think that's a really,
but just this approach didn't sit well. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really responsible way of looking at it. I think that's something that we all should bear in mind as things are developing and we're forming our opinions. It's like
Klobuchar
to the
polls,
we have to
Katie.
Give it. Sometimes we have to give it a beat to see what happens. All right, I want to get to our listener response section, but first, I think we all deserve some somewhat positive news. Mm-hmm. Huh? We want that?
Yeah.
We call it some good news.
Some good news.
Until they copyright it for their Viacom show.
Oh, boy. So vaccine stuff. It's no secret that people are racing to find a vaccine all over the world. Several drug companies like Pfizer and Inovio have begun early tests to see if their drugs are safe. And researchers at the University of Oxford say they could have one ready for emergency use as soon as September. Well, I'm not sure about that, but there is very potentially exciting news to come from the manufacturer Moderna. This, I believe, is from The Guardian. The first coronavirus vaccine to be tested in people appears to be safe and able to stimulate an immune response against the infection. The manufacturer, Moderna, announced on Monday offering a glint of hope to a world desperate for ways to stop the pandemic. The preliminary findings in the first 8 people who each received 2 doses of the experimental vaccine must now be repeated in far larger tests in hundreds and then thousands of people to find out if the vaccine can work in the real world. But then this chunk ends with the sentence, "The promising early news sent Moderna's stock soaring by more than 25% on Monday afternoon and helped drive Wall Street to its best day in 6 weeks." I just need to say I get disappointed when we talk about a potential vaccine and every single mention of it includes the stock market did great.
I know.
Like, I don't care. Fuck off with that, you know? But also, that's exciting, and we can see that and have a little bit of hope. But it's also just way too soon to be celebrating because we still don't know.
Right.
From LA Times, several vaccine experts asked by Stats. That's not from LA Times. This is from Stat, a medical website. Several vaccine experts asked by Stat concluded that based on the information made available by Cambridge, Massachusetts-based company, there's really no way to know how impressive or not the vaccine may be. While Moderna blitzed the media, it revealed very little information, and most of what it did disclose were words, not data. That's important.
Yep.
If you ask scientists to read a journal article, they will scour data tables, not corporate statements. With science, numbers speak much louder than words. Yes.
Yeah, maybe like a PR statement that sends stock skyrocketing. Maybe that's like not something to hang our hat on.
It doesn't mean it's not promising. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be hopeful.
Yeah, thanks for the good news, Katie.
Just that. Well, I've got more. It just means it's too soon to celebrate. And despite what people say, the president says, we won't have a vaccine this year. Maybe sometime mid-2021. But we don't know. But it's still positive. There's steps being made. But there's more good news I want to share. We've talked a lot about how it's still too soon to know if having the coronavirus will protect you from contracting it again. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, for a year or two. And there have been many cases of people who have recovered and then tested positive again, which could be some sort of testing failure, or it could suggest that this virus works differently than how we're used to, which would be very alarming. Mm. But now it is looking more like we may be able to develop immunity. This is from Reuters. 2 studies in monkeys published on Wednesday offer some of the first scientific evidence that surviving COVID-19 may result in immunity from reinfection, a positive sign that vaccines under development may succeed, U.S. researchers said on Wednesday. Although scientists have assumed that antibodies produced in response to the new coronavirus were protective, there has been scant scientifically rigorous evidence to back that up. In one of the new studies, researchers infected 9 monkeys with COVID-19, the illness caused by the novel coronavirus. After they recovered, the team exposed them to the virus again, and the animals did not get sick. It ends with the researcher saying, "This is very good news." And it is very good news, and we should embrace that good news. Again, it's developing. Things change really quickly, but it's like I'm so thirsty for something positive.
I will cling to that for the foreseeable future.
Hell yeah, I'll cling to that.
I'll cling to almost anything at this point. That sounds great.
Hooray us, we fixed it.
Everything's fine now.
So this week we asked you guys to let us know how someone has helped you during the pandemic or how you've been able to help somebody else. This could be as simple as something you've done for a friend, community action that you've organized or participated in, something heartwarming, all of that. And I just have to say, this is my favorite part of the week, every week. I love reading these responses. Thank you guys for everybody that participates. All right, I've got some from Twitter here. Jordan Colon says, my wife and I are expecting twins, both of our first experiences with babies. We've had an abundance of people reaching out to mail old clothes, toys, and supplies, even some that we haven't seen since high school. Even in a pandemic, people are helping, and we're so very grateful. Congratulations, Jordan. I think that's really exciting. And I can't imagine about having a kid right now during this, needing to go to doctor's appointments and not being able to connect with people that you would normally rely on when you're doing this kind of a transition, especially when you're picking up kids, getting them. And that's incredibly heartwarming. This one's from whatever on Twitter. Our soccer supporters group was worried that, one, many of our members lost their jobs and couldn't buy groceries, and two, that great female-owned and operated pub we watched matches at might go under. So the members who are financially comfortable and stable opened a group tab at the pub with a password for members. Anyone who needs a meal can get a free one on us as often as they need, and the money goes to the pub that's struggling to survive on takeout. I think that is incredible.
That's great. Yeah. On multiple levels. Exact kind of.
On multiple levels. I think that's beautiful.
Mary Imgrund says, I live in the single largest apartment building in D.C., and I've joined a group of tenants organizing a possible rent strike and setting up a mutual aid network. I just moved here right before the shit hit the fan and live alone, so I don't really know anyone, as I've been staying in my apartment all day. But we've been able to get some media attention, and even just the act of having a chat where we can support each other I think really helps, especially for our undocumented and non-English-speaking tenants who've been particularly targeted by management. It's really bad out here. Our building is where the first person in D.C. who died of COVID lived, and there's no way of telling how many people are sick since management has been really secretive about that information, but I'm trying to do at least something. I'm giving zines out about mutual aid to my neighbors and trying to get a list of people's needs with a few others.
That's wonderful.
I love that. I think that's incredible. Yeah, that's another thing that we've talked a lot about is doing what you can within your community, working on mutual aid, organizing. I think that's a perfect example of how you can take things into your own hands.
All the mutual aid. I mean, I've been like truly blown away with how well organized. The mutual aid campaigns have often been better organized than like city campaigns, mm-hmm. and on. And it's also been great to, I mean, especially with like vulnerable citizens and a lot of non-English speaking citizens, getting people involved who are able to, be able to like translate scenes like that and actually get the word out. And that's very encouraging. That's great.
This one's from Amarama on Twitter. I donated 75% of my stimulus check between an LGBT shelter resource center and an org that helps bail people out of jail. Both unhoused and incarcerated people have a lot more risk of COVID than I do. And I try to check in on friends and family regularly. I think that's incredible. What a special thing to do with that money if you are in a position to pay it forward. I'm not saying that everybody should be doing that, but if you feel comfortable with it, I think that's incredibly generous. And I'm proud of you. I thank you for doing that. There's another one I wanted to read from Ernesto Chimp Guevara. Lost my job at a lake that brings in lots of people to our little town. An old guy who loves the lake is paying $20 an hour for me and some would-be coworkers to rake and do simple yard work. And I read those together because, first of all, that guy's amazing. Good job, him. Another thing that we can do if you don't have a lot of time, but you have a little bit more money, is you can continue to support people that do services for you. That situation is a little bit different, but if you have the luxury of having a house cleaner come once or twice a month, continue to pay them what you can. If you have a trainer, continue to pay them what you can, or the gardener. Thankfully, gardeners can still work because it's outside, but you know what I mean? I think doing what you can to continue supporting people through this is massively important.
Absolutely.
This is nice. Supportive friends. It took me almost a month to get my unemployment money after I was laid off. My best friend sent me gift cards for supplies, and my parents gave me the equivalent of a week's salary to help me get by. Several friends purchased the face mask extenders, ear savers I've been making, or shared my art pieces for sale. It helped not just in funds, but also in giving me a sense of connection and purpose during a very stressful time. It's Julie Scott on Patreon.
I love that.
Great.
Just little, yeah, little helping each other out.
I think, yeah, whatever we can do. And this one's from The Middle Child. I like this one a lot. The Middle Child on Twitter. We have a grocery store that converted their cigarette counter into a homework counter for the kids and parents that don't have internet access. Also, yes, the sale of alcohol and tobacco products is prohibited in South Africa for the time being. Ooh, hello, South Africa. I love that. I think that's really sweet. And also, like, good community building. Although, I wonder how they're social distancing when they do that. But I love the idea. I love the generosity.
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say, great job.
Great job.
Great job.
Nate Platt says, it's a small thing, but I donate platelets just about every other week. I don't know who the people are that I'm helping, but there's a need for blood products, and blood drives aren't really happening right now.
That's not a small thing at all. That's so great.
Yeah, that's not a small thing. I mean, the platelets themselves are small.
That's quite a large thing.
But, like, the act is very big.
But, yeah, I've seen a lot of comments from people about donating plasma and having to wait because there were so many people that wanted to, and that's really inspiring. I'm looking for one that I saw earlier, and I can't find the name of the person. I'm really sorry, but I loved this story, and I want to end on it. This person is a teacher and started lending out extra devices that they have to students that didn't have access to technology. And then I think it was one parent or a couple parents donated a bunch of things that they had, old devices that they had. And now they have too many to give out because all of the students are now taken care of. And that really struck me as a special one. All right. I think that does it for us today. Thank you for your responses. Thank you, Jamie, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell people where to find you online, plug your work and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Jamie Loftus Help or on Instagram at Jamie Christ Superstar. And I've got a weekly podcast with my friend Caitlin Durante called The Bechdel Cast, which Katie's a past guest on.
It's a super fun show.
It's really fun. It's like, it is truly like one of the only things that I'm genuinely able to take myself out of what's happening and enjoy myself. So
yeah,
hopefully you'll enjoy it. It's a source of joy for me. And
yeah, that's a great diversion to listen to when you're just maxed out on trying to keep up with the news.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Come back sometime. We would love
it.
I will. And for now, I'll just say goodbye. And we love you very much.